Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. Yeah, I hope you're all doing well. Can you hear? Thumbs up. All right. Great. Excellent. Yeah, so I hope you're all doing well with the COVID and everything and anything else that's happening in your lives. Just a big thank you for those of you who've really helped with the fundraising. That really has been touching. Thank you. It really helps us get by through all these difficulties when it's very difficult to raise money. So thank you very much. Today, I want to talk on another case, and this is case 28 of the Blue Cliff Record. And one of the reasons I picked this up is it's, a little bit like Ordinary Mind is the Way that we did a few weeks ago. But also, this is where Nansen, who was featured in that particular koan, basically loses a Dharma conversation with another teacher. So it just shows, you don't win all the time. And it also highlights some other aspects of the teaching. So last week, basically, we were just talking about that aspect of wonder of wonders, I, all beings, the great earth, are the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. Of course, it's the traditional Rohatsu this week. The seventh being, it's the eighth, isn't it? The eighth being, let's see, Tuesday, I guess, that way. So it's important to reflect on the Buddha's life and teachings. So wonder of wonders, I, all beings, the great earth, are the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. And what we tend to deal with more importantly is, but because of our upside down views, we fail to see it. Usually the grass is greener elsewhere, people and things have a better time than we do. There's always better places to practice than the place that I stand. You can really fill in the blanks there as to why it isn't like, say, the awakened life or the Buddha's life, if you wish. So we're more dealing with the so-called relative aspect of our own lives. I mean, the Buddha said it right from the beginning, so can we swallow somebody else's words? In many ways, better not to. Better to see for ourselves in whatever way. But it's also important not to rely on our own stories, because quite often the stories we have about ourselves and our own life are not reflective of reality. This reality, not that it's fixed, this reality that's occurring now, wherever we are, no matter what we're doing. And then the thing is, can we really take that teaching that comes in on a momentary basis? Or do we want another one that may be coming later? So anyway, I'll bring up the case, and it's obviously tied in with what I'm saying right now. Not mind or Buddha. This has got no preamble, straight into the main case. Nansen called on Master Hyakujo Nirvana. Hyakujo asked, have the sages, since time immemorial, had a teaching they did not tell anybody? And Nansen said, yes. Hyakujo said, what is the teaching they did not tell anyone? We're all waiting for the answer now, aren't we? And Nansen said, it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not a thing. Okay. Hyakujo said, You said it. Nansen said, "That's all I know. What about you?" Yakujo said, "I'm not a great Zen teacher either. How would I know whether it has been told or not?" So he's having a bit of fun here. Now you got to see how he says that to him, though, too. You know, it could be sarcastic, could be you know, praising, any way like that. And Nansen said, "I don't understand." Yakujo said, "I've already told you too much." So the verse, Zen masters and Buddhas never helped people. Wow, that sounds like heresy, doesn't it? Why are we doing this? Zen masters and Buddhas never help people. Seekers, past and present, run as if racing. When a clear mirror is set up, the range of images is distinct. Even one faces south. Each one faces south to see the Northern Dipper. The Dipper handle hangs down. There is no place to look for it. One may take up the nostrils but lose the mouth. And this is referring basically to that last line. I don't understand. I've already told you too much. Now, you know, basically we can't really tell somebody else. Yet we strive to do that in one way or another. No matter what sphere we're in, we try and help people along in whatever way. But unless they actually apply it in whatever sphere, it's never really learned. I had an example of that over Thanksgiving. My mum taught me how to make pastry about 10 years ago. And I never did it. She spent all that time, and I felt somewhat guilty because she told me how to make it. But then I actually did, because I felt a bit guilty about using gluten free for the guests. So then I actually made it, and some of what my mum told me stuck. But at that point, I knew that I could do it. But before that, it was always an unknown. It was always potential. I'd never actually done it. So a lot of Buddhist teaching is around that. We may go, "Yes, I agree with that. I disagree with it." But the main thing is that, you know, if there is just one thing that can be applied and practiced, that is so more powerful than all of those words that are occurring, you know, that have been told, the sutras, and filling our heads with these wondrous teachings that so many people throughout history very kindly and gently have told us, you know, over and over and over. We say that teachings tend to be repetitive. Somebody has said, you know, "You've been teaching me the same thing for 10, 15 years. I said, "I know." I know. And the struggle is, how do I put it in a different way? It's like, you know, you get a sandwich, you know, how do you present it in a different way? You can cut it in different ways. You know, you can put mainly the same things in, but some garnishes here and there, you know, but it's the same teaching. But I'm not saying this in an arrogant way. As a human being, I need to hear things over and over until it sinks in. Just the same thing with, you know, I say this over and over, my Izumi Roshi, you know, he just say, "Appreciate your life." And, you know, about 2 years later, "Oh yeah, that's a really good teaching. It's true." I don't need to have my life be like somebody else's. It's just like, yeah, that's great. So here, these two are adepts, and this Yakujo Nirvana is not the usual Yakujo that formulated the Zen monastic rules and also was a very good teacher just all round. This was another teacher who wasn't directly related with Nansen. And they're just having a conversation, and it's like, if I have conversations with other teachers, sometimes we talk subtly about things. You know, we could use entendres and have some fun. or we might just talk directly. And here, you know, Hyakujo, from what I see of his teachings, was fairly direct. And so he goes, have the sages since time immemorial had a teaching they didn't tell anybody? Was it something they were keeping back? You know, basically, something secret. I mean, each one of us wants that. We want the inner circle speak. You know, we want that stuff that they're just holding back because that might get people enlightened too quickly, you know, or words to that effect. And so it's kind of nice, you know, he says that. Is there a teaching that hasn't been taught? And Nansen, you know, being game, he just goes, all right, yeah. Yeah, there is. So now, if you'd have said yes, then what would you say? Now, this is where Koan gets interesting. What would you say? I mean, you're all muted, but maybe you can say something, you know, later when we start talking. What would you say? He'd say yes, you know. I mean, if you say something like a standard, like just this is it, well, somebody said that before. But what is the content of that? And that's the thing that's always being taught on a momentary basis. I remember at first when I used to practice with my Izumi Roshi, he was always trying to stretch the teachings. And so he would give me things to do to fill in my time. So there wasn't really an awful lot of time left. And, you know, willingly, I did that. I filled my time up so that there was very little gap. And there was all kinds of sort of challenges that came up with that. Everything from, you know, for cooking for guests to arranging to 150 person 15 year anniversary to, you know, building things which is more within my comfort level to taking special guests to Disneyland. and so, I mean, all of this until eventually it dawned on me is that there's no shortage of teachings. Teachings were not just given by Maizumi Roshi. Teachings were not just given by the teachings of the Buddha. But, you know, there was teachings by 12-year-old kids. There was teachings by babies, the wind teachers, the sky teachers, you know. And all that really had to happen was to open up to that fact. You know, because simply, when you look at it, you take away that foreign term Buddha, which has become more like a sticker that you put on your great mirror and refer to it, and you just open up that great mirror and see that the teachings are coming in on a momentary basis. And now it's up to you whether you raise them up or you let them go down. You know, again, is that people would come to Zen Center of Los Angeles. My Izumi Roshi would be working, trimming the trees or raking stuff. He's really good at doing those Japanese trees, you know, trimming them up. And they would come up and go, is this the Zen Center? And you go, yeah, it's the Zen Center. Is there anyone here that can teach me about Zen? And he would, you know, invariably it point up to the office. We're usually just out front and go, yeah, ask the people in the office. They know about it, you know. I mean, it's great. You know, it's just great. It's just like a classic. And then they would go up and then they would learn a little bit about the center. And then they go, oh, didn't you see my Izumi Roshi as you were coming in? And then that you'd see him come up to the window. And then they would look down and, you know, their faces would kind of go red. He was, oh, I thought he was the Japanese gardener, you know. And he used to have, I'm retired written across his hat, you know. And that's what he aspired to. He really wanted to. He wanted to retire from, you know, from talking about the Dharma. But so anyway, you know, so you're in the position of Nansen after he says, is there any teaching that's not been taught yet? And Nansen says, yeah. Yeah. It really opens himself up there. You know, yeah, there is a teaching. So, well, what is the teaching? They didn't tell anybody. What is this teaching? They didn't say. So he's really on the spot now. You know, he's really on the spot. You know. Yeah. He could have said, you're dribbling. You know. The sky is blue. You know, it's really an open sphere, but Nansen, and he's more than likely fairly young at that point. And Hyakujo and Neihan is probably a little bit, you know, a little bit older. Because I don't think Hyakujo would have fallen into it in the same way that Nansen does. So Nansen says, you know, he says something that we would regard as, you know, fairly stinking of Zen, you know. He says, it is not mind, it is not Buddha, it is not a thing. Is it? Is that true? It's not mind. Now, again, you know, how is this translated? When you say it is not mind, you know, again, is this mind as we regard it as the thought process? Or is it mind, which includes the thought process, which is the sense sphere, you know? When the sense sphere is subject, the one who sees, the sphere, the actual seeing, or the hearing, tasting, touching, and the object. So basically everything's included in that. So how do you get outside of mind in that way? So, I mean, obviously, if he's regarding the thought process, that's included. It's not the whole thing. Now, this is not mind. How do you get outside of that? It is not mind. Now, it is not Buddha. Now, I was practicing or living before I even knew what Buddha was or the teachings of Buddhism. So I can relate to that, is that this teaching was going on way before that. You know, that's just a label. And at one time it was actually cool to be a Buddhist. I don't know how that is now. You know, I think we've got into the mainstream in some ways, and politically correctness has entered in, all of that kind of stuff. But Buddha, it is not awakening. If you put it from that way, it's not Buddha. It is not mind. So we've dealt with that. It's not Buddha. It's not about awaken, and it's not a thing. Wow. There's not much left there, is there? So then, what is it? One of the things that, I mean, you've got to be critical about this too. Is that true? It is not mind. It is not Buddha. It's not a thing. Is there perception of it? Is there a natural way that we just live our lives unconsciously and consciously? Is that going on? What else is there outside of this? It includes just about everything. You know, it's amazing, is that our practice is so deep that we even, you know, we do things, very complex things, without even thinking about it. And then it's done. And we wonder, how did that happen? This happens with formal practice. It happens with all kinds of things. We're immersed in things. We lose ourselves in them. It's no longer objective. There is that occurs. It's not a thing. Again, it's not objective. It occurs. Everything's included in that. Anyway, you know, I'm elevating it right now. I'm pushing that up to a certain thing. And what I like about Hyakujo is he goes, now this is kind of interesting. He goes, you said it. There's actually a lot in that. You said it. Now, it could be surprise. It could be surprise at this point. Or it could be, yeah, you said it. In agreement with that. You said it. Now, again, is that for each one of us, you know, koan is making unevenness even. As much as like in our interactions with people, if something doesn't quite gel, is that that tends to stay in our minds. So that's something sticking up, which is koan is meant to deal with. You know, it's meant to trim those things until it feels right in the body. That's the basis of koan. You said that. It doesn't seem like there's a question. There's not a question mark at the end. It's an exclamation. You said that. But can Nansen leave that alone? Like for me, is I would find that very difficult to leave alone. You said that. I mean, you could. You go, yeah, you said that. Good enough. We'll let it go at that. But he didn't. It goes on. And again, this is the living koan. If something isn't quite right, don't let it go. Until it feels right in your own body and mind. In this way, you don't need case koans, is that there is the koan of living in itself. But the case koans help us to appreciate our living, our life in this way, so that we get more insight into what's occurring in our lives. It doesn't, things don't just happen automatically and blindly in that respect. So Nansen, again, he's hooked by Hyakujō. He goes, that's all I know. That's all I know. What about you? So first one, that's all I know. He's given it his best shot. I have given it my best shot. This is what it is. That's all I know. But is that really true? That's all I know. On one level, yeah. But again, it's not necessarily about that, is that I have said what I can say about this. What else can I actually say? That's all I know. And that is gone. I've said everything I can say about this. Then Hyakujō, and this kind of shows his humor and his depth. I mean, that was a pretty good answer by Nansen. That was pretty good. You know, as if I am to judge, and you can take that or leave it, my judgment on it. But, you know, he continues. You know, Hyakujō is a character. He reminds me a bit of Maizumi Roshi. So Hyakujō says, I'm not a great teacher either. I'm not a great teacher either. Now, the either has got poison in it to start off with. That means you're not either, you know. But how would I know whether it has been told or not? I mean, of the past, you can't. You know, of the present is, are you going to stand back and watch it happen, or are you going to be immersed in it? Are you going to be going on with the practice in that way? You know? I mean, it's a great question, but I'm not a great Zen master either. Yeah, I'll do that sometime. You know, somebody's talking this highfalutin, so I don't know much. You know, I'm not going to get drawn into this. And I remember once there was a couple of people from another sangha in New England, and they were from some strange sect of Buddhism, and they got sent by their teacher to disrupt the sanghas. I mean, luckily, you know, we haven't had anything like this. And so there was this guy, and he was, you know, he was well built, and he had like a butterfly shaved into his head at the back, you know. And he was being really disruptive to one of Genpo Roshi's talks. He was Genpo Sensei at that time. And Maizumi Roshi then in the next talk was you know, complaining about this. You know, he goes, if I wasn't such a weedy little guy, I would beat you up. he was saying, you know. I mean, it was classic. It was classic. He was putting himself down, but at the same time, he's, you know, he's doing that. This is a very similar thing in this way. You know, it's just like, well, I'm not a great Zen master. You know, what do you think? Do you fall into that trap? Again, in conversations, we have this. You know, especially in business, dealing with people in important things, people will use language in ways that draw you in or push you away. And it's very important to see how language is being used. It's like, in some of, it's widely known. People have been turned around by words. You know, they're very powerful. We really, if you learn them, then it really helps you in terms of your own living to pick things up when they're coming out, and also to be able to use words in a way that really helps in a circumstance. So, you know, here we really see language being used in a very nice way. I mean, again, I use this story a lot. At the end of World War II, Yamamoto Genpo Roshi, who was a Dharma relative of Koryu Roshi, are in our own lineage. So it went like Kaiko Roshi, I think, was Genpo Roshi's Yamamoto Genpo Roshi's teacher. Mine's not working. It's my end of the week, so anyway, Koryu Roshi was like his Dharma nephew, and at the end of World War II, the Prime Minister of Japan went to see Yamamoto Genpo Roshi because he was regarded as being wise. Apparently, the blinder he got, the more wise he became. So he was very wise at that time, just before he died. And they said, how can we deal with this? The Americans have asked for our surrender. And, Yamamoto Roshi went, just tell the people the emperor is like the sun and we must bear the unbearable. Just almost like one sentence. It allowed a nation of 100 million to do something that was, you know, almost impossible for them to do, given their Bushido code, you know. So here we've got a lighter, one where they're playing, but, never underestimate that power of words. So anyway, so he goes, how would I know whether it has been told or not? Yeah, how would I know? Yeah, it's occurring all over. Why should I even bother? Those teachings are coming through on a momentary basis. Listen, look, taste, touch. All of those things we do, those teachings are coming in. And in valuing the teaching, we're also, we are valuing our lives. Not living as opposed to dying, but the living in itself, that really comes up. We see the volume, the amount of teachings that comes in. Those teachings may not even come up on a cognitive level, but in one way or another, you know, it's just like with the fire and floods, is that by seeing the valley, experiencing the valley, things coming and going, is that then you can put things into place that help. But it's through awareness. But the awareness that we have right from the beginning, since beginningless time. You know, I mean, I say beginningless time, not in a casual way, but and the fact is that I don't know when my life began. I can't say when it began. I'm told when it began. I don't know ultimately when it began. Those teachings are there. We come into this world. All kinds of teachings come in and help us to be as we are, as human beings. And so anyway, Nansen says, I don't understand. Which could be taken in various ways. I don't understand. You know, say more, you know. Or it could be, yeah, it can't be understood. But it can be experienced. So each one of us really has to see that. And then Yakujo then lets go. After that, you know, he's all the time he's kind of pushing Nansen at the end. I've already said too much to you. It's just like I know people that'll watch, you know, say three, four videos in a day on the Dharma. You know, but you know, get on with your life, apply it. And then, you know, it's like it needs to be digested and applied. Again, when I studied with Maizumi Roshi, I would say to him, you know, I can only really remember one or two things from your talk. And he would say, yeah, that's all you need. You can only really practice one or two things. The other stuff's just information. Okay, so I just want to say something there, though. In the poem, it says, Zen masters and Buddhas never help people. You know, and that's fair, that's really important. Don't expect to be helped. Is that that comes from you. And then if it comes from you, then you don't need things to come from the outside. You make those changes. You make those things that really improve the quality of your life. All right. Let's open it for questions or comments.
Okay.
Or you can answer Nansen too.
Okay, you can use the raise hand feature. You can unmute yourselves, and chat is now open. Yes.
Come on.
Here we go.
Oh, we go. Jane.
Jane.
Thanks, Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
You know, I emailed you that, you know, something really clicked with your teaching from last week. And I had this, you know, blissful day.
Yeah, yeah.
Which went away.
Yeah.
And
that's life.
Right, exactly. And I feel myself, you know, grasping, trying with my intellect, you know, to get it back. And, you know, this is exactly what happens in my practice, you know. I know what I'm doing wrong, but I was wondering if you could... how to see something like that's undesirable as neither good nor bad.
Yeah, I mean, you're basically asking for techniques. The main thing is study your mind and see if they arise, and if there is a history of those things arising. And then if there is also a history of a story that you tell yourself. So on that level, in terms of technique, is watch those things arise and watch the result of them. As human beings, we usually do pretty well from cost and reward. So the first thing is, what reward do you get out of telling yourself that story? So it's out in the open. It makes you feel a certain way, you know. And then look at the actual what that costs you as a human being to do that. And in time, if you keep on doing that, then it becomes harder to keep on carrying on with that story. Now, the underlying thing that's always there, as human beings, we devalue our basic awareness, and we look for these high spots, like you were saying, something clicks and it's aha, you know, and it's just like, wow, that's great. I've never seen that before, you know. So we hold it up like, you know, like a new toy or a new thing that we have. But like any new thing ceases to be new after a period of time. But it's important to recognize that. For us as human beings, this is how the mind works. We love novelty. We love things it's just saying the same thing. We love things that are new. But how do you appreciate just being in itself? You know, and what I'm giving you here is a very advanced practice talk. At some point, it's like stop looking for these things that are going to come and start to appreciate what's arising as your own consciousness. Look at your own consciousness. You know, you can... I'm just laughing because Gavin's asleep. you study your own consciousness, and being able to see in this is an amazing thing. And it's like when you've had a cold, something like that, and you suddenly can breathe and your energy comes back, you begin to appreciate breathing. You know, I'm not being Mr. Rogers on you here. You know, basically is that, isn't it amazing that our life includes seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, thinking, and yet we want something else. The trick is really, how can I appreciate this and stop trying to go, well, in the future, this is going to happen. You know, I'm going to become. But our life never actually exists in the future. It always exists where we are. And then when all of my energy is in this place, then I appreciate this a lot more. What's actually going on. And then also is that then I can direct it in certain ways, which improve whatever is happening, whether it's difficult or easy. But it doesn't mean that my feelings over things are going to change when it's hard. It is just hard. But I don't look for something else. You know? And I know, well, that's the inner work. The outer work, I can do certain things to improve the situation. The inner work is to accept it as it is, feel it, experience it, and then it passes of its own accord in its own season. But I'm not joking that the big trick is, how can I appreciate what I have that's been here since the beginning? Because even with realization, you realize it's been like this since I was a little kid. You know? But there's a confirmation there, which is so wonderful. This is human being. It, you know, it really is amazing. I'm sorry, I just feel like a used car salesman, but try it and see. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane. I think Anya gave her answer in chat.
Said, listen, okay. Yeah. They say that on, they say attention on every case in the the Book of Equanimity too. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, Anya. Appreciate that. Anyone else? Come on. Jeez.
Cool. Gerhard, you unmuted first.
Thank you, Roshi. I really appreciate your talk today.
Yeah.
I feel very much part of that cohort.
Yeah, yeah.
I really feel that's what's going on, really.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, and before I forget, the number I've got of yours... doesn't work. I try to call you. So if you can email me or something with the number, then I don't expect you to do it publicly, you know, but if you can send it to me, it'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks.
A teaching that hasn't been taught, you know, it's this. This is the teaching that hasn't been taught.
Yeah.
Life is life, you know.
Yeah.
And that's about so hard to... That statement to swallow the whole ocean in one.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this morning I'm very raw and emotional because I really felt into, even if I give it my best shot, it's still relative. It's so. Mm-hmm. Whatever, I mean, you know, that's, and I felt the pain of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just feel like crying because it's like a wound opened and the pus is coming out.
Yeah, and that's part of it. Yeah.
You know, we don't need to, but somehow it seems
to happen. Yeah. Yeah, and we have to remember too is that our practice or our living was there before we made any commitment towards anything else. And a lot of the things that we let out, like the tears and stuff like that, we may never know what that was triggered by. And the important thing is to let it occur. Let the body handle it, because the body knows how to deal with that far better than our head does. We tend to perpetuate stories in the head, but the body deals with things seamlessly in that way. And then, you know, the other thing in just terms of, you know, that so-called relative and absolute, there never has been that. So the important thing is don't even place it. If it's there, let it out. It's nothing. It's what it is, you know.
Yeah, I'm not looking for it. That's a new game, freedom for me to experience negativity or dislike. Yeah. Just experience it, you know. Yeah. Why do I have to fight against, you know, Don Quixote fighting windmills? Yeah. What am I doing? Yeah. You know, but it's a strong habit. It's what I've been taught, what I, I looked at life, all my life.
That's the hardest part of practice is that conditioning. You know, whether we've taken it on or we were educated it that way, is that it is true for us until it isn't. And so part of that is as we see it and as we can let it go, is let that process occur. But I remember, you know, like with my Zumiro, she said, don't worry about what you don't see. You know, when you see it, do something about it, you know. It was really good advice, you know. I was always worried about what I didn't see, but, you know, then it's like, no, you know, just take care of what I can see and do. It's good seeing you. Thank you.
Thanks, Gerhard. Galen, I saw you had unmuted yourself. I don't know if you still want to ask a question or comment.
I was just thinking that I wonder why Manson, after he said yes, didn't just say, if they could have, they would have, and let it go at that. But then I hear you.
No, that's you. You're speaking for Manson.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because it's so apparent that when people are seeking help, you want to help.
Yeah, and at the same time,
if there was a secret,
and at the same time, is if you were talking with somebody that had an understanding equal to yours, what would you do? There's a different, you know, it's a different scenario now.
Tell a joke.
Yeah, well, there you go. But I mean, you know, you're given a scenario. You're not actually given an answer. What's the joke?
If they could have, they would have.
Yeah, all right. I'm not a great Zen master either. I'm just being flippant. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No.
Thank you.
Thanks, Galen. Prajna Hart.
So carry on, guys. I'm not sure if it's Laurie or Dan.
It's me.
Okay.
It's me. I guess I'm asking, I have a question that sort of asking for advice because I'm often in situations dealing with, I work on the land, you know. I work with contractors.
I was one of them.
Yeah. Well, there's not a lot of people I work with. They don't speak English at all.
Okay. Neither do I.
So it's up to me to be the one that communicates. And if they, if they don't come back with as much, then I'm left guessing. And then so I'm often losing sleep because there are so many things to be sorted.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're endless, really. And I feel like I'm constantly getting a huge sort of banquet of problems to manage each day.
Yeah.
And then, so it's really hard to discern. And then little things happen, like, you know, we're trying to install something and there happens to be this ginormous root very, very near, tree root, very near the where we have to install other trees. And so we'll have to remove it. And then, of course, I'm plagued with the concern that, well, now the tree's going to fall in the house.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, nobody can really answer that question, you know. And so I just, it's an endless array of these things that are constantly coming
in. Yeah.
Because I can't answer each question.
No.
know, so how does one manage such a situation so that you can actually get...
I think the first thing is, you know, as an expert in your field, you see things that other people don't see. That's the first thing. And right. So then, you know, part of it is just trying to tell those contractors the information that you know. And then obviously then also the people that own the house is tell them what might occur. So at least it's out and it's communicated and it's there. Then it's more in their hands, because really it's their house, it's their things. You're communicating and doing your job in that respect.
Yeah.
And then obviously do anything that you can to mitigate it within the contract, and then communicate whatever it is that you can. But there's so many unknowns in all of this, you know. And for as much as that might fall on the house, it also may not. You know, it's a 50-50 thing in that way.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the contractor that I talked to about it was like, "Oh no, that's not going to happen. Don't worry about that. It's really fine."
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a finite. You know, we're all finite when it comes to the end of the day. We're
our
knowledge is finite, and you know, so it's very interesting, because every day has more and more things like this that come up to mm-hmm. worry about. And I'm always, you know, I'm always serving these questions to everybody.
And it's important, but then the other part, and then, you know, I was sort of included in this, is like, there's got to be a period where you let go so that it's not occupying your mind. Like for me, as part of that was that on one level, I enjoyed having my mind occupied by that rather than it being clear or free and clear.
Right.
And so for many years, I ran like that. And until it was just like, well, wait, there's always work. There's always. Doesn't matter what. So if I could put it on one side for a while, then it really benefited me as a human being. That's where Cohen's study really helped me, is, you know, because when I was most of the time when I was a contractor, I was doing Cohen's study, and so, you know, I could very easily say, well, I can't do Cohen's because I'm working and I've got all this to think about. But I found that if I actually brought it up, it would stop that habitual thinking that just kept me in a loop, and it would bring in, you know, answers from a different perspective, simply because I wasn't just going in the same way. And my usual ways that I used thought was, you know, was just really to occupy that and to try and solve problems, but it never really gave me the thing of being outside of that. And so then working on the Cohen, it was always about this and putting a scenario in. In many ways, the actual contracting was like that. There was the scenario of whatever I was doing, and that would come in. And as human beings, we can multitask in that way. And it was almost like a can opener. It would open up that thing, and then an answer would come in from a different, you know, from a different perspective. So there's always ways, even if it doesn't feel like... it's working, is that then suddenly something will come from other perspective. So it's important to go, yeah, I will find this out. It will work. And if it is unworkable, I will find that out too. You know? Yeah.
It's never done.
But it's not an easy answer, but you know, I'm just highlighting it from my own answers on those things. Yeah.
No, I find having this practice, the koans, mm-hmm. to consider it definitely does help.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me of that. It really does help. I don't feel like I'm too busy for that. Like
good.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Akasha. So, Mark?
Hey, Mark.
Morning, Roshi.
Morning.
So I found this a difficult koan to sort of get into, and it occurs to me through the discussion that it's, at least for me, it's sort of front-loaded by the person who looks at all the teachings of all the ancestors for all time and says, you know, what else?
Yeah.
You know, is there something else that might be there that I might be find useful?
Yeah.
And so that's the issue, right? You know, is there enough just with what we are and who we are and what we know?
Yeah.
And so it made me, it reminded me of a saying that I follow a lot, which is what's in the way is the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it kind of keeps me focused on the present moment.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and that's what he's doing. You know, he's seeing if this guy, you know, goes off on, you know, on another tangent, you know. Just, you know, it's just like again, as I like the Jurassic Park analogy where the Tyrannosaurus can't see anything until it moves. So he's doing the same thing. You know, he's just see if this guy moves. And if he moves, then he goes. If he doesn't, that's the end of it. It just carries on as normal. And he moves.
So I wondered why, I mean, another way we might see, which Nansen to simply say no.
Yeah, he could have done that too. Yeah, he could have said anything, basically. Yeah, what about you? Yeah, I'm bored. Yeah, let's talk about something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's nice, you know, I mean, these things, I mean, they have power. I mean, these case corns have survived simply because they have power. If, you know, if they didn't have power, they wouldn't last. And they've benefited people in one way or another for, you know, but what's this now? Yeah, 1,200 years probably.
Yeah, I mean, we all basically go through this all the time.
Yeah, we do.
And I love Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Mr. Rogers. Yeah, yeah. But some people don't. They want something, you know, more edgy kind of thing, you know. Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
He seems to me he's constantly living in the moment with whomever comes in front of him. He's constantly with that person.
Yeah. I didn't see the movie either. You know, I don't know an awful lot about his life, but I think he had a good philosophy from what I heard.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.